जय गोपी जनबाला भिरीवार झारी जय सुधानंद नाम ब्रज जन रंजन जामुनाथिदावन शारी जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी राधा माधवा जय विष्णु पाद परमहंस परिव्राजकचर्य चतुर्शतश्री श्रीमार्य सिवांगे श्रील प्रभुपाद की ग्रंथ राशि में भागवतम की गौर प्रेमनंदी ऑल ग्लोरी टू द सिमन बॉडीज ऑल ग्लोरी टू श्री गुरु एंड गौरंग श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय ओम अज्ञानंत मीरांदश ज्ञानंजनाशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरुवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदामयं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यरेव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाया ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाया ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाया श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 6 चैप्टर 5 टेक्स्ट 16 सृष्ट्याप्याया करिमायं वेला कुलांत वेगितं मत तस्य ताम विज्ञास्य किम असत कम भीर भवेत हरे कृष्ण
सृष्ट्याप्याया करिमायं वेला कुलांत वेगितं मत तस्य तम विज्ञास्य किम असत कम भीर भवेत सृष्ट्याप्याया करिमायं वेला कुलांत वेगितं मत तस्य तम विज्ञास्य किम असत कम भीर भवेत मदर्स Hey, mothers. Shrishtyapyaya karamayam Vela kulanta vegitam Matasyatama vignasya kyamasakamabhir bhavet shristyapyaya karamayam vela kulanta vegitam matasyatam vignasya kyamasakamabhir bhavet
shrishti creation apyaya dissolution kurim one who causes mayam the illusory energy vela kula anta near the banks vegitam being very rapid mat tasya of one who is mad tam that material nature avignasya who does not know kimasakramabhi bhavet what benefit can there be by performing temporary fruitive activities translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada ki jai translation Narada Muni had said that there is a river flowing in both directions. The Haryashvas understood the purport of this statement. This is their understanding. Material nature functions in two ways, by creation and dissolution. Thus, the river of material nature flows both ways. A living entity who unknowingly falls into this river is submerged in its waves. And since the current is swifter near the banks of the river, he is unable to get out. What will be the benefit of performing fruitive activities in the river of Maya? Purport, one may be submerged in the waves of the river of Maya, but one may also get free from the waves by coming to the banks of knowledge and austerity. Near these banks, however, the waves are very strong. If one does not understand how he is being tossed by the waves, but simply engages in temporary fruitive activities, what benefit will he derive? In the Brahma Samhita, chapter 5, verse 44, there is this statement, Shrishti stiti pralaya sadhana shaktir eka chayeva yasya bhuvanani babharti durga. The Maya Shakti Durga is in charge of Shrishti stiti pralaya, creation and dissolution, and she acts under the direction of the Supreme Lord, Maya Dhyakshena Pakriti Suyate Sacharacharam. When one falls in the river of nescience, he is always tossed there, here and there, by the waves. But the same Maya can also save him when he surrenders to Krishna or becomes Krishna conscious. Krishna consciousness is knowledge and austerity. A Krishna conscious person takes knowledge from the Vedic literature, and at the same time he must practice austerities. To attain freedom from material life, one must take to Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, if one very busily engages in the so-called advancement of science, what benefit will he derive? If one is carried away by the ways of nature, what is the meaning of being a great scientist or philosopher? Mundane science and philosophy are also material creations. One must understand how Maya works and how one can be released from the tossing waves of the river of nescience. That is one's first duty. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So Narada Muni in his riddle had mentioned that there was a river that flowed in two directions. So one direction is called creation and the other direction is called destruction. One creation, another direction, the dissolution. So in one direction the river flows, there is the unfolding of the material elements, the evolution, if you were, of the material elements. Evolution literally means to unfold. So all the material elements are merged into Krishna's energy, material energy, loosely termed as Prakriti. And then the river flows, there's creation, there's the unfolding of the material elements from Prakriti. And then at the time of creation, there's the devolution of those elements in the reverse order. And then there's dissolution of the universe, there's destruction. So Narada Muni is saying, for one who does not understand this process, then what is the use of his fruitive activities? If you don't understand how Maya is working, then you will not be able to get out of the clutches of Maya. That's kind of the idea. Then what is the use of all that you're doing? You will have to suffer the experience of creation and dissolution in your life. Of course, on a macro scale, that's the creation and dissolution of the universe. And on a smaller scale, a microcosm, we experience birth and death of relationships, of jobs, and so on. So you have to suffer in this way. You'll suffer. Anyone who has to experience creation and dissolution suffers, isn't it? Yes. So then, what is the use of all your fruitive activities if you understand how Maya is creating and dissolving everything by which you will experience suffering? What is the use of all that you're doing? Everything you're doing, of course, is to attain happiness, isn't it? Why do we do activities? Because we want to be happy. Isn't it Satchitananda Maya? The living entity is Satchitananda. He exists to experience Ananda, isn't it? Sat means existence. Chit means knowledge or to experience. Experience and knowledge, more or less, same thing. And Ananda. So we exist to experience Ananda, isn't it? We exist to experience. Ultimately, Ananda means prema. We want to experience love. And this is also Krishna's purpose as well. Prabhupada says Krishna and the living entity have the same purpose in life, isn't it? Krishna and the living entity have the same purpose because Krishna is Satchitananda. Living entity is also Satchitananda, isn't it? So the living entity, Krishna exists to experience love, isn't it? Satchitananda. And the living entity exists to experience also love. He wants to be happy. But he has to experience suffering in this world. Why does he experience suffering in this world? Because of its ephemeral nature. There is the creation of a situation, then it's dissolution. Then you suffer, isn't it? So if you do not understand how this Maya is working, then what is the use of all that you're doing? Everything you're doing will not help you to achieve the goal that you're looking for in the form of happiness. Because you have not understood the ephemeral nature of Maya. Understand? Everyone understanding? This simple summary of what Narada Muni is saying. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Sarva bhutani konteya pakritam yanti mamikam kalpashaya punastani kalpadovishajamyaham. So Krishna says, O son of Kunti, at the end of the millennium, a millennium means a lifetime of Lord Brahma. Lifetime of Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma lives for a long time, 311 trillion years. So at the end of a millennium, the end of the lifetime of Lord Brahma, Sarva Bhutani, all these living entities, Pakritam Yanti Mamikam, they are merged into my Pakriti. Understand? Are you understanding? Krishna, there's Krishna, then there's Krishna's Pakriti. Understand? So then at the end of Brahma's life, 311 trillion years, then Sarva Bhutani, all these living entities are merged into Krishna's Pakriti. And then at the beginning of a lifetime of Lord Brahma, these living entities are again release, kalpashaya punastani, kalpado vishajamyam. Shajami means to create, or shajami can also mean to release. So these living entities are merged into Krishna's Pakriti, and then they're released out of Krishna's Pakriti by the influence of God. Understand? Understand? The next verse he says, Pakritam swam avashabhya vishajami puna puna bhuta gramam imam krishnam avasham pakritir vishaya. I really like this verse a lot. So then Krishna says in the next verse, Pakritam Swama Vashtabhya, this Pakriti is merged into me. Understand? Pakritam Swama Vashtabhya is coming from Mahavishnu. Understand? So the living entities are merged into Pakriti. Pakriti merged into Krishna. Yes, Vishnu, Narayana, Mahavishnu. So Pakritam Swama Vashtabhya, and then at a certain point, Vishajami Puna Puna, I release that Pakriti. Understand? I release that Pakriti, and then that Pakriti will release the living entity. Do you understand how this is the two rivers flowing in two different directions, right? So in one direction, there's destruction, and living entities merge into Pakriti. Pakriti merges into Vishnu. And then when it's released, Krishna releases Pakriti. Pakriti releases the living entity. You understand? Oh, you have a question already. Yeah.
Do the individual souls retain their individuality?
Do the individual souls maintain their personality when they're merged into Pakriti? We'll get to that. And the answer is yes, of course, they're conditioned personalities. We'll get to that in just a second. It's coming up. The reason I'm quoting this section of Bhagavad Gita, because Prabhupada is quoting it by quoting Maya Adhyakshana Prakriti. I'm getting to that. So, one way, there's dissolution, river flowing in one direction, living entities merge into, and then Prakriti merge into. Then the other direction of the river, Krishna releases Prakriti, and Prakriti releases the living entities. Understand? Prakriti Swama Vaishravya. What is it? I just forgot it. Prakriti Swama Vaishravya. Vishwajani Puna Puna. Imam, Bhuta Gramam Imam Krishnam. So Bhuta Gramam means all these living entities who are taking birth, not living entities, the whole cosmos is manifested in its totality. So when Krishna releases Prakriti, then Prakriti releases all the variety of material nature in its totality. Bhuta Grama, Imam Krishnam, and now my favorite line in the verse, Avasham Prakritir Vashat. Avasham Prakritir Vashat means the living entities are helplessly moving under this process. And they cannot challenge this process. Avasham means helpless. Automatically it's taking place. Helplessly the living entities are moving in this river. Understand? River is moving in these two different directions. Avasham Prakritir Vashat, and the living entities are helplessly experiencing this process. Nothing they can do about it. Simply struggling. Understand? Understand? Simply struggling. Nothing. Avasham Prakritir Vashat means it's helpless. Just like sometimes some spiritual groups, they think like this. They say, you can choose your body at the time of birth. You choose your parents. You choose your situation. I'm like, what fool in their right mind would choose certain situations that you see in this material world? This popular idea now, that you can choose your body, you can choose your parents. Very popular idea now. So you say, okay, I'm one ugly person. Why would I choose this? Why would I make by my own self this choice? Or I choose to be completely poor, indigent, you know, bereft of any sort of opulence. I'm suffering from hunger and thirst. Who would choose such a situation? Anyone in their right mind? No jiva would choose such a situation. So Krishna said, Avasham Prakritir Vashat. Living entities are helplessly moving under this process. Then someone may say, well, Krishna, it is your fault. You've created everything in this way. Huh? Then yours is your fault, actually. It is your fault that situation is like this, isn't it? Many people. Actually, this becomes a regular theme in the Bhagavad Gita, how Krishna said, it is not my fault. And he has to say that regularly in practically every chapter. Because that tendency to blame is always there in the conditioned soul. Whatever is happening to me, the living entity comes to realize he is helplessly under control, isn't it? Avasham Prakritir Vashat, because he tries to change his life situation, nothing's happening. So he's suffering. So finally, when he cannot change his situation, then someone needs to be blamed. Isn't it? Someone needs to be blamed. Everything happening in my life is not my fault. It's someone else's fault. Who to find? Who to find? Whose fault is it? Whose fault is it? Your fault. So then the living entity is always blaming Krishna. So in so many chapters, Krishna has to say, it is not my fault. So in this way, the living entities, Krishna says, Avasham Prakritir Vashat. They're helplessly moving under this process. And then he says in the next verse, Nacha Tan Tani Karmani Nibadnanti Dhananjaya. Oh, conqueror of wealth, all these activities of creation and destruction do not bind me. The commentators explain that Krishna cannot be held at fault for this process. That's what he means. But I'm not at fault for what is happening to the living entities. Udasana vat asinam. I am situated as though neutral. Udasana vat asinam. I am situated asinam as though neutral. Prabhupada gives the example of a court judge. Understand? Court judge means he is rewarding someone, he is punishing someone. But according to state laws, it's not like he has something against someone or he's favoring someone. This is before Kali Yuga advanced, but you can try to understand the analogy. The court judge is not against someone, he is not favoring someone. Just according to whether they've broken the state laws or followed properly, he's rewarding or he's punishing accordingly. But he is not responsible for the reactions of what those entities are getting. Court judges like that. So in the same way, Krishna says, Udasana vat asinam, I am not responsible for the living entity situation. I'm situated as though neutral. Means according to the karmas of the living entities, they're getting exactly what they deserve. Avasham Prakritir Vashat. And Krishna, like the rain, that falls on the land is simply facilitating the manifestation of those karmas, but he cannot be held for the reactions of those karmas, previous karmas done, understand? So just like someone plants a seed, mango seed, and someone else plants a, avocado seed, someone else plants a peach seed. So then none of these seeds can manifest fruits unless there is rain. So then the rain comes, and then avocado seed starts manifesting avocado fruits, mango seed manifests mango fruits, peach seed manifests peach fruits. Then we say this is the fault of the rain. This is the rain's fault. Is it? You say like that? This is rain's fault that this fruit is coming up. You say like that? No, whoever is planting the seed, then he has to take responsibility for the type of fruit tree that is coming up. Isn't it? Are you understanding? So similarly, Krishna is like the rain. He facilitates the manifestations of the living entity's reaction in this world, but he is not to be blamed for it. Udasinavad asina. Asakshuteshu karmasu. Krishna makes this point. Then, this verse, Prabhupada quotes in the purport, that's why I quoted this section. Mayadhyakshena pakritihi suyache sacharatunamhetuna nena kontaya jagavi parivartate. So then Krishna says this whole process, acting under my direction, mayadhyakshena. Maya adhyakshena means by Krishna's glance. Understand? Understand? Krishna's glance is very powerful. By Krishna's glance, then what is injected into the Prakriti, so to speak, the way to image it, are the living entities along with their beginningless karmas, which includes the aspects of their personality and so on. Understand? So that's what gets merged into Prakriti means whatever sort of condition, situation they were in at the time of the dissolution, then that is put on pause button. Pause. Then they are merged into Mahavishnu for some time, Susupti state. Susupti means like a state of deep sleep where you're not really conscious of anything. And then when the energy is released, then play. Understand? Pause and then play. Then according to their previous situation, the material existence, again, that is manifested. Understand? So then, by my glance, I inject the jivas, the conditioned jivas, along with their beginningless karmas into Prakriti. Understand? I inject the living entities along with their beginningless karmas into Prakriti. Then Prakriti suyate sacharacharam. And then from there, the Prakriti unfolds and then take shape according to the karmas of those jivas. Understand? So Krishna glances into the Prakriti, which inserts the jivas, along with their beginningless karmas. Also, along with that glance is the time factor. Because material nature is insentient. It can't move on its own. It has no purpose for its own. It has no purpose for its own sake. It only has purpose for something that is conscious. Understand? So then Krishna injects the conscious entities into Prakriti. And also the time factor, which gets the Prakriti moving. Time factor causes movement in this world. Understand? So then, by my glance, which has the jivas, along with their beginningless karmas, then Prakriti unfolds and takes shape. How does it take shape? It takes shape according to the karmas of those jivas. And this whole process, Krishna says, Hetunanina Kontaya, understand that this is the cause of how material nature is manifesting according to his will. So the living entities, they have no say in this process. They're completely helpless. Avasham Pakritir Vashat. So the living entity, as we were hearing on Sunday, Hankara Vimudatma Karta Hamiti Mayante. He's thinking, I have so much control, I will do so many things. But actually, he's helplessly moving under this river. So Prabhupada's language here in the purport is he's being tossed by the waves. But when he's tossed by the waves, he's thinking, this is my decision. So the wave goes up, then the living entity is saying, I want to go up. The wave goes down, I want to go down. And this way, he's not really making any of his own decisions. He's being tossed by the material helplessly. Just like you can imagine tumultuous storm, and one piece of wood is there, or straw of grass is there, and it's just being tossed by the waves. And the grass thinking, I want to do this. That is foolishness. He's helplessly moving on the material nature. Similarly, we are helplessly moving. We have so many ideas in our mind. And we say, this is my idea. Yeah, Alibaba, where did you get that idea? That's a good question. Someone said, oh, I have so many ideas. Oh, really? Where did you get that idea from? Oh, out of my own inspiration. No, Maya gave you that idea. And Maya gives you only ideas which will help you get more entangled in Maya. Huh? She doesn't give you the idea. Let us strive for liberation. That idea is not coming. So all the ideas coming in our mind, all the things that we're doing in this world, which we give great importance to, is due to our helplessness. It is not due to the depth of decision-making that goes into the process. It is due to our helplessness, isn't it? So someone wants to please society, please, Prabhupada says like the friendship, society, and love. Why someone wants to do that? Because they're helpless. Understand? Helplessly moving on the material nature. Their will is captured by Maya. Only they are imagining that they are free, but they are completely bound up by the ways of material nature. So if one does not understand this, how he is helplessly moving on, then he continues to perform activities which entangles him more and more in the material nature. I mentioned this many times. There are two types of bondage. One type of bondage means you cannot move. Another type of bondage means you cannot stop moving. So that's the nature of the bondage of material energy. Keep you moving. Go, 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 go. Just like sometimes when, like for example, when we chant japa in the morning or some meditative practices there, and you're sitting there, but you can feel your senses getting agitated, isn't it? Maya's like, do something. And you feel like, I need to do something. And Maya's like, yeah, you need to do something. Yes, I need to do something. And immediately you have to walk, you have to read something. Something has to go on and you get agitated. This is the bondage of Maya. You cannot stop moving even for a moment. Even if the body stops moving, then the mind takes over. Zoom, 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 zoom. I cannot stop even for a moment. Maya is so strong. So this is, we're bound up in this way by material energy. If we don't understand how we are helpless in this way, then what is the use of all that you're doing? Simply you're being compelled to do that by Maya. And therefore, you will be forced to experience misery by this whole process. So another point Prabhupada makes in the purport is that although Maya is the cause of this suffering, that same Maya can be the cause of our freedom. Understand? Prabhupada makes that point. Do you see it anywhere in the purport? He always says, yes. When one falls in the river of nescience, he is always tossed here and there by the waves. But the same Maya can also save him when he surrenders to Krishna or becomes Krishna conscious. So we are helplessly moving under the influence of these material bodies and these material minds. Helplessly, we're doing things. But this same body and mind can be the cause of our liberation from Maya. So although the body-mind is a product of the material energy, is a product of Maya, if one uses that body and mind to attain Krishna, then that body and mind can be the cause of his release from the material energy. Simple analogy Prabhupada gives is like taking one thorn to get another thorn out of your foot. If you step on one thorn, then how do you get that thorn out? Your finger you cannot get, you try to get, not coming out. So then you get one other thorn is there, then you pick out that thorn, and then you throw both pieces away, isn't it? Now you keep one thorn. This is a nice one. Both pieces you throw away. So the material body is a thorn for the existence of the soul. But if he uses that body to surrender to Krishna, then by surrendering to Krishna and getting released from the material energy, that body is glorious. There's a verse like that, and I didn't think of this at the time. 87th chapter. Anyway, that says the same point. The praise of the Shrutis. Body is caused of bondage, but you use that body to become released. How you will become released from this cruel process of material nature? By surrendering to Krishna, understand? Daivyeshu gunamayi, mama maya dharatriya. This cruel process is going on. Mama maya dharatriya, and is practically insurmountable. But if you surrender to Krishna, mamevaye prapadyante, mayamitam tarantite. You can become freed from this cruel process. So then that is described here. Vela kulanta vegitam. Vela kulanta vegitam. Vela kulanta means the bank of the river. The bank of the river means the place where you can get free out of the river. At the bank, you can get out of the river, isn't it? At the bank, you'll be able to get out of the river, isn't it? So Vela Kulanta, the bank of the river, Prabhupada says in Prabhupada refers to knowledge and austerity. By proper knowledge and then the subsequent practices that come from that knowledge, you can get free from this cruel process of material nature. But Vegitam. Vegitam means at the bank of the river, the water moves faster. At the bank of the river, oh, you're trying to get out. Oh, you want to get out? Then it's moving much quicker at the bank. So you try to get out, but immediately again, drowning. And again, taking up the material process. Isn't it? In other words, this point is actually coming from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. And he also explains there, by knowledge and austerity, the tendency is to become matasya, means mad. Prabhupada translated as mad. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, anger and ego comes out. Anger and ego comes out. By knowledge and austerity, you begin to hate the world, anger, become puffed up. Oh, I am a spiritual person. I am deeply realized. And as a result of such consciousness, you become self-righteous, puffed up fellow, judging everyone like that. So for that reason, carry on in the material energy. You following proper process may be there, knowledge and austerity, to get out of the river. But then at that time, Maya is moving faster and causing some insanity in the form of irresistible pratishta. Pratishta is a great enemy of the conditioned soul. Pratishta means the desire to be number one, isn't it? Okay, I'm not Krishna, but I'm Krishna's number one devotee. That'll do. In this way, because of that desire, again, you carry on in this cruel process of material nature. So, one who does not understand all these points. First of all, what is the ephemeral nature of material energy, as we've described it? And then how the process of getting out and what happens when you try to get out? If you don't understand all this, then what is the use of all that you're doing? Simply, you exist so you can know love, Satchitananda, understand? That's what you're existing for, but you'll never know it. You'll never know. Kema sakram virabhavet. You'll never know these things because you don't know this process. You don't know about Maya. So you'll never know anything. Simply, you'll be moving under the dictates of material nature helplessly. You'll never know the purpose for why you exist. You'll never know. Sat, chit, and none. You're existing, and higher than existing is to know. Because you can exist without knowing, but you can't know anything without existing. So knowing is higher than just existing. And similarly, you exist to be happy. Happiness or love is higher than knowledge. Because you can exist and know without being happy. Isn't it? We know that one very well, isn't it? We can exist and know without being happy. But you can't be happy without knowing and existing. So Ananda is highest thing, understand? And unless you come to have that experience, then what is the use? And you cannot come to know that, have that experience unless you understand what is this? Material nature, Maya Shakti. That you have to understand what is going on. So, this is being described here. Any questions, comments, concerns, final points? Yes, Mataji.
So if you're controlled by the material energy and you're tossed to and fro, you surrender to Krishna, then you're controlled by the spiritual energy because we're always controlled?
Yes, progressively, of course. To the degree we are taking shelter of that spiritual energy, Krishna, in the form of Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, that's actually coming up. And to that degree, the material energy, spiritual energy, let's say controls you. Controls your movement.
So we're always controlled. So
yes.
The deciding factor is this independence, Prabhupada says, this little independence, our free will, is we choose which energy we want to fall under.
Okay. Of course, you can't choose until you know. So that's the problem with the conditioned soul. He doesn't know. That doesn't mean he doesn't have to suffer. No knowledge equals suffering. But once he comes to know by the grace of some merciful sadhu, the shastras which preach Krishna consciousness, then he gets opportunity to make that choice. Of course, the choice is not an easy one to make. because it involves letting go of so many things that we cherish generally. And the more you progress, the more that becomes a reality. It's certain things, some attachments we don't mind letting go of, but some attachments are our favorite ones. That's my favorite. How can I let that one go? So then that choice becomes challenging, but only those who have great courage can make such a choice. It takes courage because on the one end, it's like the living entity doesn't know what's on the other side of that choice. He's only heard about it. Isn't it? He's only heard, oh, how wonderful it is. Of course, and then he comes to the centers, and he sees that everyone does not look very wonderful. Especially the one devotee was joking how one person wanted to, he was reading so much about Krishna consciousness. So he wanted to come to see how devotees were living. This is in India, in Chaupati, I think. And so he came to the center during japa period. It's like the worst time to come. And then he saw so many restless devotees chanting, sleeping, you know, struggling to stay awake. It looked like they were suffering. So he said, I thought this was all happiness, all bliss, but where is the evidence? So we have not seen what is on the other side of the choice of Krishna consciousness. We've only heard about it, isn't it? We've only heard. And through some logic, we've experienced the other side of the material existence. So we know that is suffering. And so we would like to at least think that there's something better than this material existence. And so we've heard that there is. So on the other side of the Krishna conscious choice is this wonderful reality. But nonetheless, even having heard that, it takes great courage to surrender to that. Even after making the initial choice, okay, let's give Krishna consciousness a chance. And then after some time, one comes to know of the process of anartha nivritti is going on, and you're suffering, it seems like. Then you get some doubt. Oh, is this really all that is cooked up to be? And so to continue on despite such experience takes great courage. But yes, that is, choice is there. Once you have knowledge, you have opportunity. But it will take great courage to stick to it. Great. Yes.
The devotee was relating once, Chaita Guru, the Lord within the heart, he's directing the wanderings of the living entities. And he said, so that be the case, then why do we have to go on book distribution? Because, you know, have you heard that scenario?
No. No. Krishna is directing the wanderings of the living entities through the material energy. But as we've just discussed, that means the material energy is forcing living entities into scenarios. But within those scenarios, their decision is not predestined because there is a conscious soul there. Of course, the way the mind deals with scenarios is predestined. That is conditioned. That is locked into the material energy. So a certain situation comes upon you, and our minds have a psychological predisposition from the outset of how it's going to respond to that situation. But then besides the body and mind, there is the soul. And the soul, when infused with proper knowledge coming from Guru Sadhu Shastra, has the power to make another choice against the influence of his body and mind. So why go on book distribution? Because that is the desire of Guru, Sadhu, Shastra's, they're telling. So unless the living entity had that free will, there would be no meaning to the Shastra. There would be no meaning to the instructions of the scripture because no one could follow them if there was no free will. So the free will of the soul is there, so he can make that choice.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Really kind of shows how helpless we are. The point that I was kind of catching and was wanting to know a little bit more about was, in the purport it says that the banks of the river are knowledge and austerity. Mm-hmm. Now I was thinking that according to our karma, some may have the ability to perform a lot of austerity, they have the body for it. They may be able to absorb a lot of knowledge, also they're very intellectual devotees. And some may not have that karma to actually they may have physical difficulties, they may have a body that needs like 10 hours a day of rest or something like that. And so I was just thinking, but both of them can attain perfection if they develop affection for Krishna. So the question that was popping into my head is, how do the activities that we're doing on a day-to-day basis Aside from like the point about doing them nicely or not doing them nicely, how do they translate into creating affection for someone?
First of all, the knowledge is knowledge for Krishna consciousness, and the austerity is the subsequent practices. The 64 regular principles, and the 64 regular principles of devotional service are an expansion of the Navavidha Bhakti, understand? Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam. Rupa Goswami took those 9 elements and expanded them into 64 points. So that is the austerity. Austerity refers to the 64 regular principles of devotional service as far as Gaudiya Vaishnavas are concerned. And the knowledge refers to the, you know, theological underpinnings by which we will take up those practices. So how do you gain that knowledge and that enthusiasm for the subsequent practices? By the process of hearing. And you say, how do I develop that affection? Because you said, regardless of knowledge and austerity, if anyone can develop affection for Krishna, he can achieve the goal of life. So how does one do that? One does that by the power of hearing. Understand? By hearing, everything can be obtained. Therefore, using Shravanam as representative of all the forms of bhakti, Sudha Goswami, in the very outset of the treatise, Srimad Bhagavatam speaks about hearing as a means of developing that affection for Krishna. First of all, saying Shushu Sho Shradan Nasya, etc. And then ending with Evam Prasanna Manaso Bhagavat Tattva Vigana Mukta Sangha Jayate. I'm missing a line there. So, by hearing, one can gain everything. There's other verses there. Gane Prayasamudha Pashrana Mancheva. Jivanti sambu karitam bhavadi yavartam. Stane sita shutikatam tanumam manobir. Ye prayaso ajita jito paishi taishtrilokyam. You know this verse, right? This verse is the only verse that Mahaprabhu began to accept when he was talking with Ramananda Roy. Ramananda, he said, what is the essence of Vedic culture? Ramananda Roy was quoting so many things. Mahaprabhu said, that's external, this is external, that's external, this is external. Not accepting anything. Even he's quoted Sarva Dharma Prit Yajna, he said that is external. And then he quoted this verse, Gane Prayasamudha Pasha. Throw out, keep away, far away, tendency to speculate. Gane Prayasam. In other words, having confidence in our own proficiency. Throw that out. That is not useful for us. Namanta Eva. For obeisances. Bow your head down. Hit the floor, Jack. Bow your head down. Namanta Eva. To who? Samu Karitam Bhavadiya Vartam. To the sadhus, to Supreme Lord, to Shastra. Bow your head down. Samu Karitam literally means those personalities, such, who are Mukharitam. Their mukha, their face, their mouth is always vibrating. Harikata, Krishna Kata. You offer obeisances to them. Then Jivanti. Jivanti means make that your life. Jivanti means by which a person lives. Life. You can make this your life only. Even if you don't do anything else, this is okay. You make this your life. Jivanti means that one survives by hearing Harikata from sadhu. That is the means of survival. You think that by eating food you live? No. Not by eating food. By drinking water you live? No. By hearing Harikata you live. Otherwise, you're a walking corpse, understand? Bhagavat bhakti hinasya, jati shratum japas tapas, aprana shiva dehasya, lokana. What is that? I haven't quoted this verse in like 5 years. I don't think it's coming up. Decoration of dead body, huh? You go on with tapas, japas, you're doing nicely, but you don't have any Bhagavat bhakti, you have no tendency to hear, then you're walking like a decoration of dead body. Some walking is going on, but you are a corpse. So we have life by this hearing from sadhus. Then it says, stanesita. People like this part. Stanesita, stay as you are. That part's their favorite part of the verse. Stanesita. And whatever social position you're in, you can remain in that social position. That's how it's normally translated. Stanesita, be there only. But dedicate your body, mind, Tanuvama no bir, body, mind, words, to this harikata, this hearing process, shruti katam. Dedicate your body, mind, words to this hearing process. Then, ye prayaso, ajita jito. So although the endeavor to conquer Krishna is impossible, Krishna is ajita. Ajita means he cannot be conquered. But through this hearing process, Jit, Krishna becomes conquered. That means by this hearing process, you develop affection for Krishna. Otherwise, how you would conquer Krishna? That verse I was quoting the other day, you all remember? Many times I was quoting. You remember the verse I was quoting? Vishijati hidayam na yasya saksha nariravasha birhito pyagoga nasha pranayarasanaya dritangri padma sabhavati bhagavata pradana ukta. I was quoting this verse, remember? So it is said that Lord Hari, nariravasha birhito api, although one unintentionally chants the names of Hari, agoga nasha, that name of Hari can destroy unlimited sins. Understand? That means Krishna is so powerful, even his name. We'll just speak of Krishna in person, but his name can destroy unlimited sins. Understand? But that powerful Lord personally manifests in his devotee's heart, yasya sakshat, and he's powerless. Understand? Such powerful Lord is powerless in the heart of his devotee. Vishijati na hirdayam. He cannot leave the heart of his devotee. He gets in the heart of his devotee, he loses all power. Krishna's not so powerful after all. He gets inside the heart of his devotee, loses all power. Why? Pranaya rasanaya dritangri padma. Because they bind him, his feet, angri padma dritta, they bind his feet with the ropes of love. So how you get those ropes of love? By hearing. So what is the difficulty? Someone has this tendency to hear from Guru Sadhu Shastra, whether he be learned or dull-headed. Either way, he can develop that affection by hearing. Just like the flower girls, understand, the flower girls used to come to they were the wives of the Yajna Brahmanas. Huh? The wives of the Yajna Brahmanas were there. They never saw Krishna. But immediately when they heard Krishna and Balaram were hungry, all the foodstuffs that were meant for the yajna, they took all of that without asking permission of their husbands also, and they went out into the middle of the night to go feed Krishna and Balaram. Actually, Krishna and Balaram had told the cowboys, go to this house, some yajna brahmins were there, we are hungry, asking for some foodstuffs. They went to that house, and those brahmins said, what is this Krishna and Balaram? They're performing yajna for the pleasure of Vishnu. But Vishnu was personally asking some food. They said, what is this? They didn't want to give it. So the cowboys felt mad. What type of nonsense fellows are these? So they went back to Krishna. They were very disturbed. Krishna said, no, it's okay. Go and ask their wives. So they asked their wives. Immediately, the wives took all the boga meant for the yajna and went out into the forest in the middle of the night. Dangerous animals are there, everything. Immediately, fearlessly, they went out into the middle of the night to feed Krishna. Why? Because they were captured by love. And they went to go capture Krishna also. How did they get such love? So it's described in the commentary that the flower girls used to come to the house. And flower, I guess in traditional Vedic culture, they used to have flower girls who would come in the house and deliver flowers. And these flower girls were always talking about Krishna. And so when these wise young Brahmins would hear about Krishna, by that hearing process, their affection for Krishna took birth, and then it started to grow more and more and more and more, until they became wholesale Krishna conscious by hearing from the flower girls who were speaking very godlessly about Krishna. So then they developed, they got that rope of love, and they went to go attack Krishna, conquer Krishna, as it were. Later on, this is just a side point, this is a nice point, that Krishna sent the wives back to their husbands. They said, how can we go back? In Vedic culture, if a wife leaves for even one moment, practically speaking, then they're considered spoiled. They'll not accept you. So how? We left in the middle of the night. You know, and nighttime activities means, you know, usually, how you say, you know, more eloquent. Okay. Illicit activities going on. So Krishna will not accept us. Krishna said, don't worry, they will glorify you. So they went back and glorified, their husbands said, you are very exalted. They glorified them. And then they wanted to go see Krishna and Balaram also in the middle of the night. But they got scared. Well, Kamsa's men are out there watching all these things. They may attack us. So they could not go. Whereas the wives, because their hearts were wholesale conquered by love, they immediately went in the middle of the night, no fear. And their husbands could not go because they didn't have that love. And from the way the commentary flows, perhaps because they didn't hear nicely about Krishna from Sadhu Guru. So whether someone has learned it or not learned it, if he has this tendency to hear, all can be gained from the process of hearing.
Prabhupada says about the importance of hearing as opposed to seeing. You remember? And then the bellows, you know, that a lot of us are just like bellows, blacksmith bellows. We're breathing, but it's not really life.
Thank you. Hey, Jeremy, what's this? In Jeremy.
So you mentioned the importance of giving up mental speculation. I was wondering if maybe you could discuss a little bit the difference between the importance of giving up speculation and, you know, losing oneself to conformity in an institution.
Like losing oneself to?
Conformity in an institution.
Oh, conformity in an institution. Well, that's easy. When we say give up mental speculation, means that the tendency to just process things unaided by higher authority. So, of course, who one accepts as a higher authority will depend on their how their faith has evolved. So then, for example, in the mundane world, they have faith in scientists and so on. So although they cannot actually confirm anything that the scientists are saying, they take it for granted that whatever the scientists are saying is true. And some persons may take a more critical approach by reading those things. But the point is they have developed faith in that authority. So when they speak to us, they speak according to that authority, isn't it? And we, of course, criticize them all as mental speculators. But in that sense, they are following a process. They are speaking according to the authorities they have faith in, not just according to their own thought processes. So when we say give up mental speculation, it means a tendency to give opinions or understandings of things based on our own thoughts. But that doesn't mean there's a lack of critical thinking. But the critical thinking is in conjunction with what one has received from higher authority. So you may have a critical way of thinking about something, and the reason you're thinking about that is because of what you've heard from authorities. Well, I've heard like this, and when I look at this scenario and consider these points, I'm coming to this sort of conclusion. That's what one might call as a philosophical speculation. Prabhupada has given this distinction in his books of philosophical speculation, mental speculation. He has given this distinction. So it doesn't mean that you give up critical thinking, but it means that we give up thinking that is unaided by some higher authority. So Prabhupada expresses it simply in the Ishopanishad introduction by saying, someone will say something and another person will say, is that in the Vedas? You know, so in other words, where is that coming from? Who told you that, you know? Maya told you that, your own mind, or are you hearing from some authority and then making some point? So then, in that way, that is the meaning of abandoning of mental speculation. It doesn't mean leave your intelligence at the door, come inside. It means that we can think critically, but according to the revelation means the shastra, and generally the shastra as expressed by guru, sadhu, like that. Otherwise, there's no end to that sort of thinking that is unaided. There's no end to the sorts of things that will come up. Just like we were hearing yesterday, Nityananda Prabhupada was saying, someone was asking, what is the difference between mind and intelligence? And Prabhupada said the mind is that you go to the top of some skyscraper building and the mind will say, what will it be like to jump off? And yes, the mind is such all sorts of foolish things, ideas come to the mind, isn't it? We don't reveal everything that we're thinking to people. We only reveal the things that we estimate to be more intelligent, isn't it? The other things we keep private, although we may be thinking it, isn't it? So the mind tends to think of so many foolish things also. And so the intelligence is supposed to check the foolish way of thinking, but intelligence has to be cultured, and it's cultured by acceptance of some type of higher authority. So in all practical life, even for mundane persons, their intelligence has been cultured by the type of authorities that they have accepted in their lives, beginning with parents and then teachers and so on. So it's practically an unavoidable reality. So when we say mental speculation, we mean the tendency to think without the support of revelation. So many like controversial ideas may come up within institution or otherwise. And then a devotee's way of thinking about that will have to take support from the revelation. So he will say, this is my point, and here's the revelation that supports that idea. And then generally, if it is not a correct, there's, Shastra tends to support a lot of things because it's very broad-minded, but then there's something that's called Siddhanta. There's a conclusive understanding. So in Vedic, I don't know if you call it hermeneutics or exegesis. Yeah, in the Vedic way of interpreting things, some thesis is proposed. That is called the Vishaya. Some thesis is proposed. And then Samshaya, some doubt is offered to that thesis. And then Purvapaksha, some argument supporting the doubt. And then after that, there's some reconciliation. And then what's called is the Siddhanta. Now the conclusion is drawn. So from Shastra, there, from Revelation, you'll get all sorts of ideas. This is actually coming up in two verses. The Shastra is like a veritable jungle of sounds. You know, just like in the jungle, if you're walking around in jungle, you'll get lost quickly, isn't it? Sometimes you say, I'll go to the bathroom, so you don't want anyone to see you. So you walk in some funny way to go deep so no one will see you use the bathroom. Then you want to come out, you become bewildered. Wait, I marked this tree, but was it that tree? And that way, Shastra is like that. It's like a veritable jungle of sounds. So then many people will justify many things on the strength of Shastra. So then there's a Siddhanta. Some doubts will be offered, some antithesis, Purvapaksha, some argument, and then a conclusion will be reached. So there is no lack of critical thinking for those who are Vaishnavas, but they think critically with the support of revelation, not unaided. So that is what is meant by abandoning speculation, like that. Not abandoning intelligence. Okay, so I'm fine. Jagannatha Prabhu was wanting to say something. And then we can end after Acharya Prabhu.
Haribol, thank you for this beautiful presentation. Of course, based on Srimad Bhagavatam. It's nice words. So as we were hearing in this verse, this living entity, he has to understand how he is stuck in this place. And somehow or the other, by good fortune, if one comes into Krishna consciousness, then he sees, you know, the banks of the river. And he's trying to make, you know, going towards the shore. But as the verse beautifully explains, you know, the waves are faster near the shore. So connecting this with as an earlier presentation, where many of us, you know, we come into Krishna consciousness, but it's, you know, the more glorious thing is how we stay in Krishna consciousness. So what are some of the, you know, two or three key elements that we try coming, you know, we keep attempting coming to the shore, even if we may be tossed, you know, 50 feet back, but staying resolute? Because Prabhupada says, the last sentence is, that is one's duty, first duty, he says. To try to understand how Maya works and get out of it, that is one's first duty. So, two or three key elements that will ensure that we'll finish our journey. That's...
Two or three, wow. Well... Under let's say, if I were to categorize it, under the category of losing confidence in one's own proficiency, which is the tendency of conditioned soul to be overconfident about his own power. So underneath that category, you said two or three points. The first point is humility will follow that. Humility makes us susceptible to higher vibrations. When one is lacking humility, then they cannot hear from anyone. And just like this image is given that I always appreciate it to describe humility. If you want to transfer some water from one cup to another, then how you will do it? One cup has to go low, isn't it? Then the transfer can take place. So in order to receive vibrations from authoritative persons, there has to be a strong element of humility there. Otherwise, you cannot receive anything. So after we gain some knowledge, the tendency is that we were humble in the beginning because we knew what is our position. It was obvious to us and obvious to others also. And then what happens is some water is poured in, some knowledge, and then the cup rises. And then my sense of ego rises higher now. And that way we are on the path of destruction. So it means that even after gaining some knowledge, one has to remain low. low enough that he can receive some higher guidance from higher personalities. So it's the humility that is the hardest thing to keep up in a lot of ways. Prabhupada said that the tapo divyam and the Kali Yuga, in describing it, is Trinada Pisunichana. He quotes his verse as the tapasya for a devotee in the age of Kali. So humility is our number one. And of course, in the development of prema, Mahaprabhu underscores humility as the greatest asset. So that would be the first point. And it's hard to somehow gauge humility, because the tendency is it has to look like something. Like sometimes a person who's like very meek and gentle, he may look like a humble person, but he cannot hear from anyone. So generally, hearing is really the test of one's humility in a lot of ways, especially when you have to hear feedback or things that you might not like to hear. If you say someone is chanting so many rounds, that may not be an exhibition of humility. But when you have to hear from someone, then that really brings it out, how humble or... And generally, like even now, like we're here in class, but many times, because we have some knowledge, we are arguing. In the mind, so much argument is going on. Oh, I don't accept that. All right, that's okay. Oh, good point. You know, like that. So much argument is going on in the mind because we lack humility. Now, that doesn't mean there can be a difference of understanding and opinion, but just the way the psychology tends to work. So humility is something that should be studied, should be understood in a lot of ways. And humility is also... is mentioned as one of the angas, if you will, of one who is a Sharanagata. So without humility, there can be no Sharanagati, no real actual surrender to the Lord. So that would be one point, humility. In conjunction with that, another point is sadhu sangha. Sadhus are the indispensable shelters for the condition. So there's a beautiful verse in the second chapter of the 10th canto, which describes the sadhus as taking a boat to cross over the ocean of material existence. But this is such an extraordinary boat that even after they take the boat on one side of the shore, the boat is still left on the other side, so that the other devotees who are less advanced can get an opportunity to cross over, isn't it? So sadhus will always be our prospect in Krishna consciousness from beginning to end. In the beginning, it is obvious that sadhus are our shelter. In the interim state, we tend to think that they are less important. But I was just reading Bhakti Sundarbha yesterday. A beautiful point was made by Jiva Goswami that after hearing so much philosophy of Krishna consciousness, the Abhideya is concluded. What is the Abhideya? Means the process or methodology for attaining Krishna. What is the Abhideya? Abhideya means the process. What is the process? Bhakti, understand? Which consists of hearing, chanting, and so on. The Abhideya means bhakti yoga, understand? Not karma yoga, gyan yoga, ashtanga yoga. Abhideya is bhakti yoga. So where you will get that bhakti at? From bhaktas, isn't it? So then Jiva Goswami says, because you can only get bhakti from bhaktas, bhaktas are also the Abhideya. He makes this point, huh? We say bhakti yoga is the Abhideya, but Jiva Goswami says because you have to get bhakti from bhakta, then bhaktas are also the Abhideya. So they're the means by which we start the process, and they're the means by which we advance in the process. They are the Abhideya. So along with humility that allows us to be receptive to the seed of bhakti and so on, then that sadhu sangha continues all the way through. Satam prasang gamam avirya samvido bhavanti rikana asa ayanakata ta joshana ashu apavargavatmini shraddha Rati Bhakti Anukramishati. By hearing and chanting in the association of sadhus, that hearing and chanting is like a life-giving tonic, rasa ayana. Huh? Now, before hearing from sadhus, we're dead corpse. Then life-giving tonic is given in the form of hearing and that sangha. Immediately resuscitated, you come back to life. And then by this process of liberation, Anukramishati means in this order you will develop faith. Huh? Then rati means bhav bhakti, and then bhakti means prema bhakti. So by sadhu sanghas, you move through the process of Krishna consciousness. So humility, and then that allows us to enter into the process, and then the Abhideya includes sadhu sangha all the way through. Now sometimes what happens is as we're progressing, sometimes sangha can shift. That is natural in progress. Just like Prabhupada, we were just hearing this example yesterday about kindergarten teacher and third grade teacher and so on. You have different you have respect for all the teachers, but as you're growing, sometimes it may happen that there's some shifting going on. But the point is that sadhus are there from the beginning until the achievement. So that would be another point, humility and sadhu sangha. And then another point, you said two or three. The other point is, as we're progressing, there will be some problems, understand? There will be problems will come up in our minds, in our life, in life circumstances. And the tendency is that those situations tend to knock the air out of you. Huh? And then you lose momentum in Krishna consciousness because of it. So, when dealing with those sorts of life circumstances, perhaps you can say a transcendental patience is required. Enthusiasm, yeah, I was thinking Uttar Nisha and Daryat. I was really underscoring Daryat. Patience means forbearance even in the face of great obstacles that will come up in the course of our progress in Krishna consciousness. The obstacles are generally created by the mind in conjunction with circumstances of our life and internally knocks the life out of us. So we start off moving into the temple, we're like balls of energy. You know, like little kids when we come to Krishna consciousness. And as you stick around, there's a diminution of the light. First, we come off totally effulgent. We're like, yeah, Krishna consciousness. I remember when I got initiated, I was like, I'm going back to Godhead this life. Yes. You know, and I was like, really vibrant. And then as you stick around, it becomes more and more dark. Because this is the innervating nature of material existence. Innervating, you know this word innervating? It's a cool word. Innervating means causing to lose vitality. Understand? So material nature is innervating. E-N-vating. Innervating. It means it causes things to lose vitality. So then, because of this tendency of material existence, there's a need for a transcendental patience also. A forbearance in the face of this obstacle of the innervating nature of time. Expressed in another way, it's a statement of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta that I always appreciate it. Someone wrote him a letter, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta responded, apparently in a letter someone must have asked him how he was doing or something. He said, by the grace of Krishna, I am still not bewildered, no, I'm still not unenthused by the aversion of the people of this world towards Krishna. And I always found that to be a very profound statement because we are living in the material world and we do see a lot of aversion. And the tendency of aversion is also there in our heart. And when you're experiencing the innervating nature of material existence causing you to lose vitality in Krishna consciousness, then those persons who are averse all of a sudden become very attractive. You start even justifying how they're as good as devotees also. They're very nice people also, like that. And you start to shift, your consciousness starts to shift in this way. So there's a need for forbearance, utsaha nishaya darya, these principles of progress given by Rupa Goswami. So you said two or three, so I would underscore those things, I guess, just randomly. Humility, sadhu sangha, patience, like that. Anyway, I'm sure there are many things that could be said, but I get to. Yeah.
Enthusiasm that we feel when we come, you know, to the process of Krishna consciousness. Yeah, where we feel like, you know, we'll get there tomorrow. But our acharyas also explain that initiation is the beginning. It's sadhu sangha bhajana kriya. And anartha nivritti starts. So the actual real anartha nivritti starts as one practices bhakti. So one is, you know, one has to be ready to face all that. As one chants the holy name, then things will come up. So the process is actually working. It's not working. So, as you're saying, so it's almost like, feels like we've been tossed back, you know, 100 feet. But although, like using Nityananda Prabhu's example yesterday, distance and displacement, it may seem like we've been tossed back the same, you know, distance, but hopefully our consciousness has displaced a little, further in Krishna consciousness. Yeah. So, patience.
Yes. Okay, y'all. Thank you all very much. Om Tat Sat. Thanks a lot. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
How many years Kishore Kishore manifest, revealed?
It's at 42 on Sunday.
Hare Krishna, Hare Bol. Hare Krishna, we just got a very brief announcement. Hare Krishna. So today we are honoring, we believe it's the 42nd anniversary of the manifest worship of Sri Sri Kishore Kishore Ki Jai. 41st. Thank you for the correction, Prabhu. 41st. So some devotees requested that we do another ecstatic all-day kirtan. However, last time we did that, some devotees were requesting maybe we could mix it up a little bit, introduce some reading from authorized literatures, because maybe our community does not yet have the adhikar to just get fully absorbed in the holy name. Or at least I don't. So we're going to read some also. So persons whose name is listed there, they're invited to either chant or chant Hare Krishna, chant bhajans, or read something for the pleasure of our deities and the devotees. That's going to begin at 9 o'clock, and hopefully it will go until 9 o'clock. Hare Krishna, if there are any questions or complaints, you can please come and address them to me. Hare Krishna. Oh yeah, Brahmachari meeting right now. Hare Bol.